this is Lewis Stevens. When were you an apprentice, Lewis? Do you remember?
Well, I was when I got asked to come on, I was actually trying to think. I was like, oh God, I can't. Everything's just a blur
17.
Now.
16, no, I think 17, it was, 17, 18.
17, 18 it was.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, September 2017 to September. Because I think the first day or something was the day before my birthday, I think. I think that was the first day. I think it's something weird like that. But yeah, 2017 to 2018. So
yeah,
somehow 4 years ago now.
Yeah. And I was telling you earlier on, I always tend to start the conversation. I always think back to when I first saw you. And I first saw you, we were in Envis, we were doing the workshop. And you came in dressed to kill for an interview. Fair play to you.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's basically, I remember at the time, I blamed my father and I blame him again now. It's basically that he's always told me, basically, you can never be overdressed, even though I don't know if I suppose he's been proven right, really. But yeah, it was one of those things where I think I even went out and I bought a new suit. I needed a new suit.
Bless you. Yeah, so you had a lovely blue jacket, I remember.
Yeah, I've still got it.
That had pads in it that was a bit like a sofa.
Yeah,
it was all padded.
I'm sure I bought it. Yeah, I did. I bought it specifically for that because at the time, I remember even saying to my girlfriend and to my dad, I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, workshop. I was like, that doesn't really scream interview to me. It doesn't really scream suits, tie, trousers, the whole shebang. And then I turned up and I thought, yeah, I was right. That wasn't really the vibe of most of the people in there. But it was just one of those things. And I quite always think it's better to look smart, isn't it, than to
you did have the wherewithal. You had a little quiet word with me and you said that I'm a bit worried. I think I'm overdressed. And I can remember saying, just take a jacket off, take the tie off, roll up your sleeves and you'll be fine. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. So it must have worked in a way. It's just one of those weird things at the time. I remember I walked in and I thought, oh, God, I thought, yeah, I'm a bit overdressed here, because I remember a couple of people looking at me thinking, oh, Christ, here he comes. Who's he think he is, type thing. In reality, I'd gone out the day before, bought a suit as like a panic buy, because I tried all my ones on the day before and realised that from school I'd put on about a stone and they didn't fit me anymore.
But the funny thing was, when all the sports guys from the BBC came, you looked exactly like them. So, you know, they always say that you employ people like that look like you anyway. So you were perfect. So that's probably how it worked.
Yeah, I remember walking in, because obviously then we had the second interview, and I remember walking into the sport department and I had gone suit again then, because I knew it was an actual interview as well. And I remember looking around and most people, not necessarily in suits, but were in shirt and trousers and whatnot. So I've...
Yeah. Yeah,
but a bit more appropriate
jackets.
Then. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So you were in the right kind of combo.
Yeah, exactly.
But apart from that, then, when you were, you know, the remembering the awkwardness of thinking, oh my God, I'm overdressed. Do you remember anything else about that workshop at all?
Yeah, I remember it quite well, actually. I remember going into it, and basically because of the fact that I'd had no sort of media experience or anything, I remember that I don't really get nervous about too many things. I kind of think that I've always thought that no point getting nervous about it, because it doesn't change that you've got to do it. So just kind of accept it and try to deal with it the best you can. And I remember walking in and I spoke to a couple of the people in there. And then I spoke to someone and I think he did some commentary for Swansea Radio and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, well, there's a lot of people here with a lot more experience than I've got. So I kind of thought, Not kind of thought, oh, well, I'm not getting this, but I kind of thought, oh, I'm backs up against the wall a bit here. I might struggle to get through to this stage. And I just remember that it was just like the fact that there were so many different people there. It was like a really wide range of personalities and whatnot. And I suppose that's because obviously not everyone there was applying for.
Yeah, there were all kinds of different jobs, weren't there, at the time?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had a lot of kind of, yeah, a lot of arty people, because there was an art department job and there was, yeah, I can't even remember now what jobs there were, but yeah, there were all kinds of different things. But for me, that's the strength of the workshop, because, you know, the way we work in the industry, you don't just work with the same kind of people, do you? You've got to work with all kinds of different people. And that's part of what we try to find out, is whether you can handle the fact that there's different people around.
Yeah, I've always like considered myself like quite an approachable person, someone who likes to speak to other people, and I just I think everyone there, to be fair, was the same. Like, I can't remember meeting someone and thinking, oh, I'm not really fussed on them. I just remember thinking, oh, everyone here seems pretty nice. It's quite easy. And I feel like that when you've got so many different like personalities and whatnot, it made it quite easy for everyone to calm down and relax and just kind of express themselves in the way they wanted to. And when we were all given like little tasks and icebreakers and stuff, I think that helped, that people were so different. So no one really felt nervous about expressing who they were type thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. So starting off at the BBC in the sports department then, so when you say you walked in, first of all, and they all, you kind of looked the same as them, which is good. But you also had the massive advantage of having exactly the same interest at them as them.
Yeah, I've always found that, like, it's weird because I try to, like, describe it to people. Like, when you're working in a sports department, it tends to be that when I was working in other jobs or when I was at uni, all I'd speak to people about was sport, because that's all you want to speak to people about if you're a sports fan. Obviously, you discuss other things and whatnot, but for most of the waking day, I'm either checking sport, I'm checking the latest news, or I'm chatting to someone about sport. Like, all my mates that I've tended to gravitate towards, they're all interested in sport, and it just made it quite easy. Just so, like, I've got like a lot of good friends at the BBC now who work in the same department, and there's such like a wide age range, not massive, but as in like there's a clear age range between us, but we all get along really well just because everyone shares the same interest in sport and everyone wants to talk about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the sports department of all the departments are the people that are working their hobby kind of thing. Yeah, your work life and your hobby life and your downtime life is more or less the same. You don't, you know, it all merges into one, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a weird thing because obviously being in the sports department, I work so many weekends, and people are like, oh, God, you must hate working weekends. And I'm like, well, not really, because what I'm doing is I'm watching sport and I'm covering sports, which is what I'd be doing if I wasn't working anyway. The difference is I'm just getting paid to do it. And I'm obviously I'm working hard, but as in my days, especially on like a Saturday or a Sunday when there's sport on, they just tend to absolutely fly by.
Yeah.
And then before I know it, the days come to an end just because it's nice and busy and you've got plenty on, but you're watching what you want to be watching anyway, so it's hard to really complain, I think.
Yeah. So you started off, I remember when you were an apprentice, you were doing a lot of the social media, weren't you? You were kind of producing their social media content. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it basically, one of the people who was there now, who's now at BBC Sport in Salford, we were kind of like mentored me and kind of like showed me the ropes, because I was going in there, although I used social media, I was going in there with a complete kind of clean slate. I didn't have a clue how to work in social media or whatever. And it was one of those things where I think it was kind of, there was a gap there as well. So it kind of made a nice fit. And because of my age, I think with the BBC looking to target youngsters as well, it kind of made like a natural fit. And it was something that I kind of took to quite easily and I enjoyed it. And I found just learning new things about like video editing and learning about social media and running Instagram accounts and running Facebook accounts. It was just one of those things that seemed to be quite a natural fit. It wasn't forced. I worked in other departments. I could work back wall in and helping out with live radio shows, occasionally write stuff for online. If it tends to be like mixed martial arts or something, normally I'll tend to do that, but I'm still doing social media, and it just seems to have been one of those things that's been a natural fit.
Yeah, yeah. So did you ever specialise in one sport? Does that happen within the department? Because, you know, I know there are some people maybe that they only do football and they only do rugby, but I don't think that ever happened to you, did it?
No, it didn't happen to me. What there tends to have been is that in the department there's basically people who normally get assigned to certain sports, but they won't exclusively do that. But it tends to be that, oh, this person will do this, this person will do that. It kind of makes sense. And they've built relationships with the managers. And so they're well known and they know how it works. I on social media, though, it's just you've got to be across
everything.
Absolutely everything. Like if I do ever write content, it does tend to be mixed martial arts because it might not be like the most mainstream sport. I think it's getting there now, but it's something I've always watched. So again, when it comes to written content, I've found like a bit of a gap there as well, because it's something that I have always enjoyed watching. So I consider my knowledge to be pretty decent. But yeah, apart from that, especially with social media, you can't.
So you found a bit of a niche there for yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do tend to find a niche, especially if it's not one of the biggest sports like football or rugby, like mixed martial arts. Although it is a big sport, it's not for everyone as well. Not everyone likes it. So it's just one of those things that I found a niche for, and it's just one of those things I enjoy. Right, find quite easy as well.
And it's probably something that will get bigger on mainstream telly, because lots of sports is going behind the paywall. Yeah, it'll be one of the things that you can still see without paying, probably.
Yeah,
as time goes on.
Well, yeah. Well, when they announced, because they announced, I think it was 2 or 3 months ago now, that Bellator, which is one of the promotions for mixed martial arts, has signed the deal with BBC iPlayer. So it's a big, big thing, because it's normally all been on BT Sport and other platforms like that. But for BBC iPlayer to have it, it's quite a big thing. And is, I remember when I saw the news and when we had the email sent out to let us know that that's what's going to happen, it was quite exciting for me, because I thought, oh, it's going to be a big push on this now as well. So hopefully more opportunities for me as well when it comes to that sport.
Yeah, and that's really great. And then how about things like international games, you know, football, rugby, that kind of stuff? Do you get involved in that kind of thing, or is that a different team?
Yeah. So with the normally with like a, so if I take a Wales rugby match, for example, if we're not, we won't travel abroad, but if the game is home, as in like before COVID restrictions and whatnot, a lot of the time one of us would be down at the ground, like in the media bit. And what you'd be doing is you'd be tweeting, obviously, all the live scores and all the live action and whatnot. And then what we've now started doing is we've started adding into the live page. So the website live page, whoever's on the social media team that day will be listening across Radio Wales and basically typing up any decent quotes and basically adding them into the live page, and also monitoring social media. And if any famous people tweet anything that's quite funny or whatnot, inserting that into the live page and whatnot. So from when I first started to where it is now, it's changed, and you're starting to get more responsibility, which is what I like anyway. I'd much rather feel like I'm under pressure a bit more than to be comfortable, because I don't feel like anyone does their best work when they're comfortable, really.
And being live, that's quite a big deal, isn't it? Because, you know, it's the pressure of the deadline the whole time, isn't it, really?
Yeah, because that's the thing. If someone goes, say someone dives over in the corner and they're lining up the conversion, obviously we're a news broadcaster, so we can't be slow. It can't be 3-4 minutes after the conversion's gone over. It needs to be pretty much as the conversion goes over, you're tweeting it. So it is time pressure on times like that. It's not always like that, but when it comes to live football, rugby matches, you've kind of got to be on the ball. And it's the main thing is just like spell checking. So you might type out your tweet and everything, and you're about to type it, and then you'll notice like a little spelling mistake and just little things like that. The things that they do happen, because people do tweet stuff out and then they notice immediately, oh God, that's got a spelling mistake in it. Quickly delete that, copy and paste it, all that. Yeah. So it is a bit of pressure, but it's quite enjoyable pressure.
Yeah, and that's probably something that you would do because it's work and because it's the BBC, and you wouldn't bother doing it if you were doing it on your own account.
Oh no, yeah, like I would, if it was, so say I'm not working for a Wales rugby game or whatever, I might tweet once or twice like, oh, so-and-so has really impressed me with their work around the breakdown or something like that. But yeah, I would never, like, I think normally, I'm trying to think, because we wouldn't just do score updates. We do, say 5-10 minutes have gone and there's been some, no one's really pressing the advantage, just do update tweets to keep people in the loop and whatnot. So I don't know. They do tend to, you tweet an absolute ton, and then you're obviously posting score updates onto on Instagram as well. And then any major news onto Facebook after the game as well. So it's one of those things where there is pressure on you to get it done at a certain time, but it's quite enjoyable, I think, anyway. Yeah. And as I said before, it makes the day go pretty sharpish.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about your progression then. So you were apprentice for a year, obviously. And then from my memory, there wasn't a full-time job straight away, which is never a guarantee anyway. And that tends to happen to lots of people, especially in sport. But I also know that when they like their apprentice, their former apprentice, they will try and do what they can to give you dailies or weekend work or whatever. And I think that's what happened with you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so it basically came to the end, and I'd spoke with my line manager at the time, and I basically made clear, I was like, listen, I'm very like aware of the fact that you can't just make a job.
Yeah.
There's got to be a job actually there. So I basically, at the time, I took up a job in a cafe Monday to Thursday, because there didn't tend to be any shifts going. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'd normally work in the BBC. So either social shift or potentially the back wall shift. So helping out with the live and cutting off all the goals and whatnot for radio purposes and whatnot. But it was just one of those things. Obviously, it was quite tiring, but it's just one of those things you've got to do to kind of keep your foot in there. Because I kind of thought, don't stop now, because then you'll have absolutely no chance and you'll be back to square one again.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's something that people need to understand as well. Even though, you know, you'd fought your way in, you'd worn your suit, you'd followed your father's advice, you'd got there. But even getting there doesn't mean that you're there forever, does it? You know what I mean? You've got to keep on following your father's advice and doing, you know, being there, being willing, being able whenever they need you, basically.
Yeah, because I remember, because the back wall shifts were basically, I think every single weekend I had, on a Saturday, I'd go in to help out with the back wall stuff. I remember I'd constantly message the radio producers. I was like, listen, if you've got midweek games, you need someone. I may be working, but I can definitely come down after work because I'll be finished in time. It's just one of those things where you just got to, no one, especially in media, no one gives anything to you. Like, even when you're in the job, if you want to be trained on something, you've got to chase it up. You've got to kind of do it, because people don't go out their way to give you things. You've got to basically let them know that that's what you want. And people appreciate that when they see a bit of initiative, I think, especially I've found that in my department anyway, massively.
I would say everywhere, Lewis, you're a brilliant example, I think, of somebody that has never just sat there and waited for something to come to you. You've always gone for it. You know, you've been quite clear in what you wanted. You know your goal, you know where you want to be, and you're going to find it, you're going to find a way of getting it. And lots of people aren't like that. Some people just sit at home saying, I'm not working, nobody's coming to me.
Yeah, I just remember one of those things as well. It was because I think the job that I'd worked in before I decided to join the apprenticeship, I found it so like really bad. I really enjoyed it, I think, when you experience that. But I knew I had to stay in that job at the time because there was nothing else. You can't just not work. You kind of, you've got to make sure you're earning money and whatnot. So I remember, I think probably just having that job, I remember thinking, God, I don't want to go back to that job, because that job before was really poor and I don't want to end up back in that situation. Yeah. So you kind of just got to do.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I wasn't earning a lot of money when I was working in a cafe and then freelancing, but it's just one of those things. And then when you end up getting the job or whatever, it just makes you think, oh, there we are, that's why I did it.
Yeah, exactly. So there we are, and that's a perfect segue. The next thing that happened was you'd been doing all your weekends, and then a job came up that you applied for.
It was basically, I'm trying to think now what it was. So I applied for a job first off, which was
social media producer, wasn't it? Something I seem to remember.
I think they changed the title. It was social media producer or social media journalist, which is my current title. And I remember I applied for it and I didn't get it. And then my boss called me and he said, listen, he said, you're still really young, you're still inexperienced. He said, don't pack it in either. He said, please don't pack it in. And I said to him, no, don't worry, I wasn't thinking of packing it in. It's just one of those things. You can't complain. Someone who had more experience than me at the time and was a good few years older than me. I think he's 3 or 4 years older than me. He had more experience. He'd worked in it. It's the logical step. You don't put someone in just because you think, oh, well, I know them.
Yeah.
Let's give them a freebie type thing. So I didn't get that. Just carried on as I was. And then I think it was 4 or 5 months later, I ended up, there was another fixed term contract role and ended up applying for it, and this time I was successful, because he did tell me last time, he said, listen, you were really close, you were second, he said, so please keep at it. So when it came around again, I just kind of thought, go in there with a bit of confidence, because I remember the first time I kind of not crumbled, but I remember thinking, oh, I'm not sure, and the second time I just thought, just go in there and give it your all, you're being told that you did well last time, so just kind of give it
and
your
with
all,
the BBC system as well, because they're sorry to cross you there, but because they're because their system is so specific, you know, because they give you scores and all that kind of stuff. If you were second, he knew very well that you were second, and you'd have been very unlucky not to have got it, probably.
Yeah, I think it was just one of those things where when you don't have the same experience as someone else, it's out of your hands. You can't really complain about it. You just got to kind of suck it up and carry on and get back onto it.
And then the fixed term contract then lasted what, 6 months, a year?
I'm trying to think now. So I got made. Yeah, I was on a fixed term contract, and then it got extended, it got extended, and then they ended up advertising the post as permanent, and that was not this time last year. It was a bit longer than that. I think it was about February, March of 2020. They advertised social media journalist as a permanent role, which is obviously, I was like, wow, permanent, that's a massive deal at the BBC.
These days it's a massive deal. So you're there till you retire now.
Well, that's what loads of people say, don't they? They basically say, well, you're in now, so that's you done. But I remember that when I think I got offered the job about 2 weeks into lockdown, so at the time, obviously, people didn't really know what was going on. It was kind of like, oh, this will last a month or whatever. I remember I was working from home anyway at the time. And I remember my boss called me and he said, listen, you and so-and-so, you and Gareth, you both did really well. And we're actually going to make you both permanent. So it was actually a massive surprise. And it was nice to know that the person I'd been working alongside had also been.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Because we'd been working really well together, and we'd been boosting all the social media channels. They'd grown, our Instagrams had grown like massively, and it was quite nice knowing, I know who's going to be alongside me, so we can try get some plans in place and keep working forward, type thing.
So moving forward, the future before you're 60,
because
there's a long time till then, apart from maybe cutting the grass every now and then and making your face go red.
Yeah, like a tomato. Yeah. I don't know. I've always wanted to. I've made it. I actually had to fill out a personal development thing about two weeks ago.
BBC for you, yes.
And I basically said some form of presenting of some kind. That would be my. That's always been my dream since I've been about six years old.
That's interesting. That's a bit of a. Not a sidestep, but then lots of sports journalists do, don't they? They do appear on camera.
Yeah, it's kind of something I've always, I've always felt comfortable doing, speaking in front of people or doing stuff like that, like a drama at GCSE and all that, and did productions and whatnot. I've always found it quite comfortable. And I remember from being really young, I've always wanted to present. I always used to think it was commentating I wanted to do. And then since I've been in sport, and I've seen the presenters and been and like watched programs like Scrum 5 and whatnot, I thought, oh yeah, that's the type of thing that I'd like to. But obviously, presenters these days, you don't really see too many 25-year-olds.
No, you don't. Not in sport, you don't. You're doing the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But not in sport so much. No, yeah, so and the pundits are old as well, aren't they, when you think about it?
Yeah, so it's one of those things, like I'm not in a rush or anything, and I'd quite like to be able to adapt my hand to every single aspect in the sport department. Like I chased them for CPS training, which is what you use to write online and whatnot. I chased them up for that because I wanted to be able to write stuff and then hopefully get a bit more experience looking at radio. I just like to be able to do everything, but the ultimate thing for me would be presenting of some kind. But
maybe Wales's main presenter of multi-martial arts or whatever it's called.
Yeah, mixed martial arts.
Mixed martial arts.
Yeah, that would be the dream one day, but it's just one of those things where we've got to bide your time and have some patience, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting though, because the pundits I find are getting younger, aren't they? They're bringing different people in as in the punditry thing.
Yeah, I think what they're doing, they're bringing through pundits quite soon after they retire. So I think a lot of players, football players in particular, you'll see who haven't even retired are doing the odd appearance here and there to kind of warm themselves up to media. Because you can quite clearly see the ones who are going to go into coaching and the ones who
think, oh, I fancy a bit of media, I fancy my face on the telly for a bit.
But
yeah, no, they're getting you. It's just one of those things. It's just got to bide your time. And
It's fashion, you know. And fashions change. You know, Dan Walker was very young, I'm sure, when he started.
Yeah, he's just announced he's leaving Football Focus. And
oh, is he 12, really?
Yeah, after 12 years. He's still going to do BBC Breakfast. But he's someone I always look at, and I think, oh, yeah, always looks smart.
Because that must be punishing. And actually, you're the same type, actually, aren't you? You know, the same kind of... Same type, same similar personality as well, I would say. But it's an interesting, because I think he's a fantastic presenter. And the Football Focus thing, he was very young, but he's always been a really good presenter. But it must be punishing doing BBC Breakfast and Football Focus.
Yeah, so I'm sure he's going to be presenting the NFL show now. He Mark Chapman before, and it's going to be him now. But that's on late at night. But I can't imagine they do that live, surely. But I don't know, maybe they do. But yeah, he's flat out by the sounds of it anyway.
But he's a talent, isn't he? You know, he's really good, and he's obviously being pushed to be better.
But it's just one of those things, isn't it? You've just got to, you've got to bide your time. You've got to get your head down and just take, even if you get like one opportunity, just take it. And then if you have to wait a while for the next one, at least you've had one.
But you've also done the right thing by telling them, because, you know, I always say during the apprenticeship, I always say we're not mind readers. You know, employers don't know if you just sat there in your house in Turkey saying, I really want to be a presenter, and crying over your social media and wondering why is nobody doing anything. They're never going to know unless you actually tell them. So, you know, even if it's in your development plan that you tell them, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it was one of those things where they asked, I think they asked for your job goals, like in your current job, and then they asked for your career goals. So obviously in the career job goals, I put some targets for where I want to see our social media go to and what I want to end up achieving within the next 3 years. And then within the next 5 years, what I'd like to do. And so it was just simple things like being able to present one radio show would be great if I could do that in the next 5 years. Yeah, it's just one of those things where I think you've just got to outline your intentions, and at least then they know. So if something does happen, if someone pulls out, or if someone says, oh, I don't fancy this anymore, then they know that there's someone there who's willing, maybe not able straight away, but someone who's willing and willing to give it a go as well.
Yeah. But one of my friends that worked at the BBC, the long-term goals, he always used to put early retirement.
I think that's the same for a lot of people anyway, isn't it?
Didn't go down very well.
No.
From when you're about 25. Like, what's your long-term goal? Early retirement. Yeah. So long-term goal is that presenting eventually, or presenter? Because there's a lot of that kind of stuff that goes on as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I think presenter would probably be I wouldn't say no to it. The producer type stuff, but presenting, that's always been there.
So it's not Gary Lineker, it's Dan Walker, is it?
It would be Gary Lineker. I mean, presenting Match of the Day, he's brilliant on that. That's where I always wanted to do when growing up. What I think every
that's
fan
the kind
does
of ultimate
well.
Dream job.
One in a billion shot. That is the Match of the Day. That's always been, I think that's the same for a lot of football fans though. You ask any football fan, they say, that'd be the one, present Match of the Day one day.
Yeah, well, it was even Gary Lineker's, wouldn't it? You know what
I mean? It would have been. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's interesting how he got there, but he's sticking there like a limpet as well, and he's not going to go anywhere soon.
No, BT does everything. He won't be going anywhere anytime soon.
Exactly.
I think I'd find it weird if I turned on and saw Match of the Day on a Saturday night and it wasn't Gary Lineker. I just don't think it'd feel right, but that's a weird thing, isn't it?
Who did it used to be? Was it Des Lynam?
Yeah,
and they used to call Gary Lineker Mini Des, apparently, when he was a footballer. Because he was always practicing to be a presenter when he was even playing football. I've heard that story somewhere.
That's the nickname you want, though, isn't it, then? Because everyone knows you as it and everyone thinks, that'd be a good fit.
Yeah, so there you are. So Mini Gary Lineker is what we're calling you from now on.
Yeah, just a bit younger, just a tad anyway.
Well, yeah, that's where the Mini comes in. So settled job-wise, settled home-wise, final goal up there in the kind of rear view, no, not the rear view mirror, the main forward mirror. And then what, tootling on, just doing what you're doing now for a little while.
Yeah, I quite enjoy the role that I'm doing at the moment. I'd with mixed martial arts, going over to BBC iPlayer and stuff, if there's any opportunities to start covering, I have covered like mixed martial arts down live at events and done reports and stuff like that before. But yeah, it's one of those things where I am really enjoying the role I'm in at the moment, which is probably why I'm not like desperate to progress, because I'm not in a position where I'm like, oh God, I'm stagnating or anything like that. It's kind of like I'm really enjoying my job, but any opportunities I can have to challenge myself or do something like that, if there was any opportunities, yeah, I'd bite someone's hand off for it, because that's just, it's quite nice. I think being able to say, if someone said, oh, we've got this, who can do this? Oh, Lewis can do that. Oh, I thought he worked here. I thought he did that. Yeah, but he can do that as well. It's nice to be known as someone who can adapt to any kind of situation, I think.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the new suit when you first present your first mixed martial arts programme.
I'll wear the same one, just for old time's sake. I'll wear that one with a pink, I think I wore a pink shirt and a navy tie or something like that.
Oh yeah, and make sure that you send it to us so we can put it on the Skull Cymru website.
Yeah, you can frame it.